This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. Populism, pacifism, and isolationism. Thaddeus McCotter joins, writing for American Greatness, on these three ideas that have been commonplace throughout America's history, but now they come together. I recall when I was a lad, the Vietnam War, there was much debate all the time about the conduct of the U.S., the commitment of the U.S., blood and treasure. These days, we have two, perhaps three wars in Eurasia. There is no debate on the floor of Congress. There are no Oval Office addresses by the president to update us at our risk. And in fact, there's no challenge at all from the two parties that even something as straightforward as the protests against George Bush's administration in the Iraq War. Nothing like that. Why not? That is a very good evening to you. It's all missing. We can't see it. Is it going on anywhere, a debate? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. With the Vietnam War example, I think the key distinction is that you had a draft that sent America's men and women in uniform into harm's way in a foreign theater for an extended length of time with no clear resolution in sight. The strategic objectives were rather nebulous, at least to many observers. And so what you eventually saw was the war decided in the streets of the United States as much as anywhere else, with the public support fading. When you look at it today, John, you see the rise of populism in both parties. You see the Bernie Sanders supporters, the progressives on the left. You see the Donald Trump supporters, the MAGA individuals on the right. Both rise in proportion to their alienation and disillusionment with representative democracy, with representative institutions and their conduct. And that applies to foreign affairs as well. So when you talk today about, say, the war in Ukraine, or are having to deal with the Houthis as proxies of the Iranian regime, or our support for Israel as they deal with the Hamas terrorist network in Gaza, you see the Americans, not quite cynical, but certainly chary about why we're there, why we're supporting these individuals. They're very concerned that American troops may be involved. In fact, we've seen the Biden administration using the threat of American troops potentially being engaged from the Ukrainian theater to try to extort funds out of the Republican Congress, which is very inappropriate. Yet, at the same time, both Republicans and Democrats in many quarters do not like the expenditure of foreign money into these military engagements. They don't like the U.S. presence in one shape or form within these military theaters. And so you're seeing a rise of isolationism, both the anti-war pacifist wing, especially within the Democratic Party, and the isolationist wing, especially within the Libertarian and the MAGA wing of the Republican Party. And I don't see that changing. And the only way that you can surmount that, and we've not seen this necessarily in the instance of Ukraine, or particularly with the Houthis, is you have to be brutally honest with the American people. You have to explain what the danger is to the United States, our citizens, the strategic objectives that are imperiled. And then you have to talk about the military objectives, not a timeline, but just a military assessment, assessment of military objectives and how they can be reached. And then the ultimate resolution of the conflict, both for the enemy that we hope to defeat and for ourselves as well. Some of this led to the problems that we saw in Iraq and Afghanistan, and ultimately the disappointing resolutions of both of those. And unfortunately, we don't seem to have learned much from it at this point.
Do the American people not want to hear, why are we in Ukraine? Why are we in Gaza? Why are we firing missiles at something called the Houthis? Is that an indifference to the American people?
No, I think it's the exact opposite, John. They want to hear about it, but they want people to know that they're being told the truth. And they want to make these assessments themselves as to whether the strategic objectives are truly imperiled and are necessary to be defended. They want to know what our military objectives are, especially they want to know whether they're going to entail the presence of American military personnel on the ground in any of these theaters, and for what length of time, at least in general. You can't put a timeline on these things. And then they also want to know what the ultimate resolution is over time, not only to our enemies, but what will it be to the United States? We saw this at the end of World War II. Unconditional surrender meant that we would reconstruct our enemies into democracies allied with the United States. And as the Cold War progressed, we saw the soundness of that. So we need to, I would argue that we need to be honest about the fact that we're engaged in a new Cold War of authoritarian and totalitarian regimes, communist China, authoritarian Russia, theocratic and barbarous Iran, Venezuela and Cuba, communist Cuba is part of that. And then we can start to look at the picture of where we should or should not engage with funding, support for allies, and some of the other aspects of our diplomatic and other measures that we can defend ourselves and advance our interests of ourselves and our allies. But we haven't done any of that. And so they're hearing this piecemeal and they're having to put it together. And there's been no larger understanding conveyed by the policymakers. Not that the public doesn't understand it, but that the politicians themselves don't necessarily understand what they're doing. And so what you're seeing is basically a foreign policy that is akin to looking at a bumper sticker of a car, trying to figure out what their position is and why what it all means, as opposed to a longer coherent undertaking that you can actually base an opinion upon. So I don't think that we're going to get that anytime soon, especially heading into an election year. And the early results, John, from some of the statements we've seen from both Mr. Biden and Mr. Trump aren't propitious to a stellar dialogue regarding America's foreign policy and strategic vital interests.
The withdrawal from Afghanistan is a moment in the Biden administration where you can puzzle, is that the beginning of the decline of trust in Mr. Biden? To my understanding, he's not tried to reverse that doubt ever since August of 2021. Mr. Trump, on the other hand, is campaigning avowedly as someone indifferent to foreign policy, not going to press any war, any conflict, any confrontation, to my understanding.
Well, I think Afghanistan, everybody understands that this has been going on for decades. It was a failure of several administrations that culminated in the abysmal withdrawal from Afghanistan. So the American public has become disillusioned with the old apparatus of American foreign policy. And so I think that they're very concerned that they don't wind up in a situation like that again. Right now, they have no reason to believe that they are or are not. And I think that's leading to some trepidation, some wariness on their part, because they want to know more about what they're getting involved in. And so when you start to see Ukraine and you start to hear things under the Biden administration again, that we may have to send American troops if we don't get all the money we want, that's not what the American people want to hear. They'd rather just not send any money or the troops if that's going to be the case. So I think that that's irresponsible statesmanship. That's irresponsible foreign policy. I think it's also irresponsible on people like Mr. Trump's part to argue that Russia or others should attack non-dues paying members of NATO. I think that that's irresponsible, especially as that's collective defense, which means that an attack on one of these individuals, whether they pay NATO dues or not, is an attack on the United States by treaty and by understanding. So you have to be much more responsible, and you have to understand that even if you're appealing for domestic votes, if you're going to be the president of the United States, leader of the free world, you still have to behave yourself and act like an adult.
That is McCotter. American Greatness. This is Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.